Well, the number one seed in the East region, Syracuse, escaped Wisconsin by a point. Florida and Ohio State also advanced last night to the Elite Eight. For NPR News, I'm Scott Graff in Charlotte.
For Bob Barker, it didn't matter if the price was right. Where the welfare of one elephant was concerned, the 88-year-old TV host and animal rights activist is ready to write a check for $888,000 to transport three elephants from the Toronto Zoo to the Performing Animals Welfare Society Elephant Sanctuary in California. One of them suffers from a serious foot problem and might not have survived a truck trip. I'm Louise Schiavone, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Ally Bank, who values straightforward reporting and straightforward banking. Learn more about Ally Bank at allybank.com.
Everything is great. Everything is grand. I got the whole wide world in the palm of my hand.
The Muppets movie is out on DVD. On the next Fresh Air, we hear from Jason Segel and Nicholas Stoller, who wrote the film. Segel also stars in it. Join us.
With someone to paint,
someone to pose, life's a piece of cake. With someone to pedal,
someone to break,
life is full of glee.
With someone to saw.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
WILL programs are made possible with support from The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson, the producer, and Jason Croft at the controls this hour. Kyle Mabry was on hour number one. Once again, for this hour, we're bringing you a program from the Focus Archives. You can check the schedule and listen to past shows, by the way, by going to our website, will.illinois.edu. This program that you are about to hear was first broadcast on January 30th, and in this hour, we'll not be taking calls. In this hour of the program, we'll be bringing you the story of one of America's oldest public hospitals, Chicago's Cook County Hospital. It was a place that's been a place of major medical achievements, but also a place long known to be troubled by underfunding, by poor management, and by political interference. The guest for our show today, Dr. David Ansell, is today the Vice President for Clinical Affairs and Chief Medical Officer at Rush University Medical Center in Chicago. Back in 1978, fresh out of medical school, he went to Cook County for his internship. At that time, he says, County Hospital was ground zero for all of the crucial questions facing the U.S. healthcare system, and those are questions we continue to face today. He's the author of a book that's recently published. The title is County, Life, Death, and Politics at Chicago's Public Hospital. It is published by Academy Chicago Publishers. You can find it in the bookstore or wherever you get books. And Dr. Ansell, hello.
Good morning.
Hey, thank you very much for talking with us.
Sure.
We appreciate it. Let's just go back that point where you and some of your fellow students out of med school in upstate New York made the decision that you wanted to come to Chicago to do your internship. What was it about Cook County Hospital that made you say, this is the place that we want to go?
Well, that's a great question. A group of us in medical school were somewhat disillusioned by what we saw of the healthcare system, especially what we felt was the fact that healthcare was not a right. We believe that healthcare was a right and not a privilege. And we saw a lot of discrepancies even in our medical school training. And we wanted to go to an institution where the social determinants that underpin healthcare inequality was right out there in the open. And we looked around the country, and there were a number of different places, but one of them was Cook County Hospital in Chicago. It was at the time a troubled institution. The funding for it was in question. It had gone through a disaccreditation process 3 years before. 2 years before we got there, the house staff had gone on strike, and which is to this day the longest doctor strike in U.S. history. They went out around patient care conditions, the fact that the patients didn't have soap or towels. There were no EKG machines or Spanish interpreters. There weren't scheduled blood draws. And the strike leaders, doctors no older than us, while they won the demands of the work stoppage, were actually sentenced to Cook County Jail for 10 days. Our professors told us it was career suicide to go to a place like Cook County at a time when many American school graduates were going to academic medical centers like the one I'm in right now, Rush University Medical Center. But we decided that this was exactly the place that we should go because it was at the crossroads of everything that we thought was wrong with the U.S. healthcare system. And it was a place that we felt that we would hopefully learn medicine, but also take a stand for against the inequalities that we saw rampant in our system.
Yeah, I think that it's also true that you believed then, and I'm sure still believe now, that people's health, the state of their health, had a lot to do with the conditions under which they lived. Not at the time, I think, majority opinion in medicine. What experiences had you had, or perhaps they were the teachers that you were exposed to, that back there in the late 70s led you to that position?
Well, I think all of us probably came to it in some different way personally. In my own situation, I'm a child of immigrants. My parents emigrated from England. My mother's family was from Poland and perished in the Holocaust. And as a young child, I was very troubled by that, and not so much that a government might do bad things against people, but more so that people didn't speak up. And so this notion that one needed to speak up in the face of things around you that you disagreed with was something that I carried with me. And when I got to medical school, it was really clear to me that while I went to medicine to be give back and for all kinds of altruistic reasons, it was very clear to me from the very beginning of medical school that inequality was hardwired into our healthcare system, and that really troubled me as a person who believed one had to speak up against these kinds of injustices. I was also, as a child, exposed to the civil rights movement and then later the anti-Vietnam War movement. So I think many of us came really grounded in a sense that it was larger system issues that drove health outcomes. And all of us individually came to it in probably slightly different ways. But I came out of it out of a strong sense of sort of what was right and what was wrong. And I saw a lot of things that were wrong when I was in medical school that troubled me about our healthcare system. And the underpinning is that it's one thing to be poor, and we're dealing with this today in this day and age, this issue of income inequality and the lack of social mobility in our own society, in our own country. That's a problem. But the idea that one should die or have complications as a result of that just seemed wrong, and especially when it came down to simple access to health care.
Yeah, it seems that it's very clear that your bottom line here is that today we have it is as much, almost as much, or maybe as much as we had in the late 70s. Today, there are two health care systems in this country, one for people with money or for people who have insurance, and one for people who are poor. And that it was true in the 70s when you went there to county to be an intern, and it's still true.
Yes, and in fact, I wrote county because in the last 30 years, I've actually worked in three hospitals on the same street in Chicago. So I spent 17 years at Cook County Hospital, and I left to work about a half mile down the road at Mount Sinai Hospital, which is the largest private safety net institution in the state of Illinois. And then I landed, after 10 years at Sinai, up the street at Rush. And you couldn't design a crazier healthcare system than I've seen in these three hospitals, but also my patients who've been with me, many of them since I was an intern, who've moved with me from place to place. And the kind of inequalities that occur daily on this one, I say on this one street in Chicago is really emblematic of what's wrong with our healthcare system. And that was a big motivator for me. But even more than that, I'm an epidemiologist and a primary care physician, in addition to being a chief medical officer. I've done a lot of work over time in health disparities. And in many ways, you can say that the United States is actually going in exactly the wrong direction when it comes to, I call it the death gap, because it's better articulated in that way, that the life expectancy rates in this country rank us about 36th or 37th in the world. And depending on what year, we're a little bit ahead of Slovakia or a little bit behind. But our national policy was to eliminate health disparities and this life expectancy gap, I call it the death gap, by the year 2010. And nationally, we haven't budgeted at all. In our major urban areas, it's actually going in the wrong direction. So the problems that we were inspired to come to Cook County Hospital in the late 70s to address, and we did a lot of different things at county with other people, and we were successful in many ways, but the underpinning problem has not really been addressed at all in this country and is unlikely to be addressed at all by our health reform. And I want to point out, it's not just about two tiers. We probably have five or six tiers that at the bottom is in people who are uninsured. But even people with insurance nowadays are facing major obstacles. Unless you've got a platinum type of health care insurance policy, even people with insurance are faced with oftentimes life and death decisions, whether they pay for something or do something else in their lives.
We have a caller here. We'll bring him into the conversation. Other people who are listening are certainly welcome. Let me introduce again our guest, Dr. David Ansell. He's a physician. He serves as the chief medical officer at Rush University Medical Center in Chicago. He's the author of the book, County, Life, Death, and Politics at Chicago's Public Hospital, and it's published by Academy Press out of Chicago. And it is in part a history of the nation's the nation's oldest, certainly one of the largest public hospitals, in a place where, as he explained, he went to be an intern in 1978, and he spent 17 years working there. And so the book is in part a story of County, that hospital, what it's like, and also some of his experiences as a young doctor there. And questions are certainly welcome, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. We do have a caller in Champaign, so we'll talk with them. Line number one. Hello.
Hello. Yes, doctor, I'm a native Chicagoan, and I think we're about the same age. And I was fully familiar with the situation at Cook County when you went there as an intern. And I just want to congratulate you and commend you for going to Cook County at that very difficult time and spending all those years there. We need more doctors like you, as opposed to doctors who spend their time looking at their stock market portfolios. So thank you on behalf of everyone.
Well, thank you for your generous comments. I will say there are many of us who made career choices to go to underserved parts of the country, rural areas and areas like Cook County Hospital. And one of the things that we have to do, and my daughter's a medical student now, is people aren't going to these places. People are leaving medical school with a huge amount of debt. I mean, the average is somewhere around $300,000. They're very concerned about their ability to pay it off, and we've created all kinds of disincentives in this country that keep people from serving the poor. The biggest one, I think, is actually the structure of our health care system. And were we to have a fair health care system, I call it Medicare for all, where everybody got the same card, you could use it anywhere, you would have doctors and hospitals in these underserved communities, not only public hospitals like Cook County, but other places, rural areas as well as urban areas, who'd be willing to go there because they know that they could make a fair living. And right now, the healthcare system and the way it's designed keeps good-minded and well-intentioned people from doing it. So I appreciate your comments to me. My reflection after 30-plus years is this is about how our system is designed, and it shouldn't be dependent on the goodwill of a few young physicians or nurses that makes a difference.
All right. Well, again, other questions welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I'd like you to talk a little bit more about what the Cook County Hospital was like when you got there. I think it's telling that the hospital, the old hospital, opened its doors, I believe, in 1914, and as far back as the late 20s, people were saying that it should simply be torn down.
Yes.
And so we're talking about now 1978, and it took until 2002 for a new hospital to be built. So talk a little bit about when you got there. I mean, you had to have some idea what it was like, but was it when you saw what it was really like, did you think to yourself, what in the world am I getting myself into?
Yes. You know, it's one thing, I say, to have an idea in your head or being an idealistic young person. I had no idea what it was like. I'm from a small town in upstate New York, and I had actually, from the age of 15, had worked in a hospital doing all kinds of different things. So in your mind, you have an image of a hospital as being this sort of antiseptic-smelling, clean place. And my first visit to Cook County Hospital was anything but auspicious. It was this lumbering, old institution on Harrison Street in Chicago. Built, as you said, in 1914, and this was now, my first visit was 1977. And you opened a door, and it was like no other place I had been before, more like a, you know, a bus station or a big, it was just throngs of people. And what was most unusual about it in that day and age, though there were still hospitals in the country that were like this, were the open wards. There was no air conditioning. There was bed next to bed next to bed. There was a sink at the end of the hallway. Usually it did not have soap there, one sink. The bathrooms for the patients were down the hallway at a different length, and there were phones, pay phones, way down at the other end of the hall, and they'd be ringing all day. And you would be loath to pick it up, because then you would have to go find the patient that someone was trying to reach. It was really conditions that were almost inhumane, considering that this was 10 years after the U.S. had landed someone on the moon. And it was quite shocking to me. That first visit was even more inauspicious because we were supposed to meet with Dr. Quentin Young, who was the chair of medicine, and he was out of town. Somehow the appointment got screwed up, and we got taken to a meeting, and a leaflet was shoved in our hands that said county hospitals are closed. So not only was it in terrible shape, but we didn't know if it would be open for a long period of time. And you have to understand, at that period of time in U.S. history, public hospitals were closing across the country. Philadelphia General, one of the largest public hospitals, had closed in 1976, and the leaflet we were handed said county hospital to close. So partly there was no agreement at that point in time about whether the hospital should be opened or closed. Well, we, of course, thought it needed to be open, as did lots of other people, but there was a lot of opposition to it, and they would prefer the body politic that the patients and the doctors and the nurses would operate under what you would call I really would call them just completely unacceptable physical conditions. Mm. And we toiled along this way until we indeed won the fight for a new hospital, but it was 25 years later.
Yeah. We'll take another caller here. This is someone who's listening here where we are in Champaign County. This is line one. Hello.
Hi. Since you mentioned the great Quentin Young, I'd like to ditto the remarks from the previous caller about your work, but his work as well. I'm sure he's a great colleague of yours. And one must remember that he and the current governor actually walked across the state in favor of a single-payer plan some years ago, and it actually would be a solution to the overspending in the medical area. But I wanted to see if you had comparable experiences to some of the stuff that went on here. the Hill-Burton Act and the related legislation that actually empowered citizen groups to be involved in decisions about capacity and new hospitals and whether there should be 5 MRIs in the most expensive boutique hospitals in an area, as opposed to putting money into this the system as you described it. Sounds Dickensian, if you will. I wanted to, because there was a lot of activism here. In fact, the activist group that is sort of, you know, an outsider group now, Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, derives their name from this idea of having producer suppliers or councils and consumer groups. I actually, frankly, have to point out that I think calling healthcare consumers is a misnomer. One doesn't consume healthcare like it's another commodity. So I've gone on for a while, and but I'd like to know if that affected you as a municipal hospital, which we had here late lamented in the middle 70s, I guess, whether that kind of history affected you, and whether you can say something about that.
Well, I could speak to just what I hear you saying. A couple of things. One is, you know, Quentin Young was the legendary chairman of Internal Medicine County, still alive at his late 80s, and one of the leading advocates in the country for what's called a single-payer health plan. I call it Medicare for All, or improved Medicare for All, because it's a one-card system that actually would be a lot cheaper and cover more people. We have the most expensive healthcare system in the world by twice the nearest competitor, if you want to call it that, with the exception that we have to keep 50-plus million people uninsured, 60 if you keep 60 million, if you count people who are uninsured at any time during a year, in order to have such an expensive system. But the, so I'm a big proponent of it. Governor Quinn was, and as happens with all these politicians when they get in office, the influence of the insurance companies, who I think are the major enemy in this. If there's bad guys in all of this, it's the insurance companies who really have the profits at their heart and not healthcare delivery. But I will tell you, back to this issue of the community activism side of it, we would not have a replacement Cook County Hospital were it not for the community in groups like the Committee to Save Cook County Hospital that really spoke up in favor of a strong public sector. And so we couldn't have done it without that support. Patients, sick people, are not great advocates because they're sick. Poor people, no one really listens to unless one organizes in large groups. Doctors in public hospitals, you know, get sidelined as well. So we couldn't have done it without community involvement.
You know, there's so much we could talk about, but just at this point, I really want to again go back to what was happening there, what conditions were like in the late 70s, and it was the case at Cook County and in a lot of other cities that had big public hospitals, that if you were an individual who was, if you were poor, if you didn't have insurance, if you were really sick and you were taken to some hospital, the practice was that they would simply pack you off to whatever the public hospital was, and in Chicago it would be Cook County. And I think that you and other folks there were really leading the charge to get that changed. And in fact, eventually in the late 80s, as a result of action of Congress, it was changed.
Yes. You know, it was probably from the beginning of time. Public hospitals were the dumping place for the undesirable and certainly the uninsured. And it's not just in Chicago, but all around the country where another hospital would transfer someone to another hospital. And we didn't think much of it. In fact, in those days, there were not attending physicians around, so we were the residents in training who ran the emergency room. The phone would ring. It'd be a hospital. There'd be a clipboard next to the phone with a piece of paper, and you'd have to fill out the information, the name of the patient, the condition, the vital signs, and the reason for transfer. And there was a bunch of check boxes, and one of them was no insurance. And indeed, that was always the reason for that. In 1979, the BBC came to Chicago to do a documentary and show the English public what healthcare in America was like. And they asked a doctor, Dr. Linda Ray Murray, who was a young resident, what do you call this phenomenon of these patients being transferred from to Cook County Hospital? And she looked in the camera and said, I call it murder. And that was the name of the BBC documentary that played in 1979. But what happened in the early 80s, the number of these transfers rose from about 100 a month at our place to about 600 a month, and this phenomenon was seen around the country. It really paralleled the rise of the uninsured in the U.S. during the Reagan years, the loss of factories, insurance, et cetera, and hospitals and doctors around the country found themselves faced with this onslaught of uninsured patients. And so what do? Dump them to Cook County Hospital. So a group of us decided that this was wrong, but there was a lot that we thought was wrong with our healthcare system, and no one really would just listen to us. So we decided we would do a study, and we tracked 500 of these patients, and it took us about 3 weeks. And what we did is we collected all their information, and we went and interviewed them, and then we saw what happened. So when we went to interview the patients, we asked them, what did the other hospitals tell you? They had told us on the emergency sheet that it was for no insurance. The most common reason the patients were told were no beds. Turns out that about 25% of these patients were unstable at the time of transfer. 22% ended up in an intensive care unit, and 9% of the medical patients died. Some of these were quite horrific. I remember one case was in the paper we wrote, woman, 10 centimeters dilated, terminal pregnancy, and in terminal labor, pregnant, breached delivery, foot in the vagina, transferred to county, no insurance. And our OB colleagues would tell us about women who would die in the emergency room at county given birth. And this was legal in the United States for this to occur. So we wrote a paper. There was actually opposition in our own hospital to us doing this because a lot of people said, well, that's what county's for, isn't it, to take the uninsured? And our argument was, yes, but it's one thing if a patient shows up in our emergency room sick, of course we have to take care of them. But if a sick patient in need of emergency care shows up in another hospital, why shouldn't they take them? It turns out that our paper got published, and actually the opposition to us was so great that we held a little press conference the day the paper came out, and the hospital held a counter press conference in the room next to us. In fact, the county board president, George Dunn, may he rest in peace, called us a bunch of amateur sociologists. But the paper came out. It made the front pages of the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. I was on Nightline. My colleague Bob Schiff was on Oprah. And eventually I got called to testify before Congress. And this led to EMTALA, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, which actually prohibits this. And it's the only form of universal health care we have in the United States now, the right for emergency care. And that's something we were very proud of. But it also gave us a sense that we could change the system if we persisted. And that's why many of us today are such strong proponents for single-payer Medicare for all, because we think that we can win this fight. Despite the odds, despite the number of years we've had this current system, that we can actually have a better system than we have. And it was that patient dumping work that gave us the confidence that we could overcome what seemed to be extraordinary odds to achieve benefit for really everybody. And it wasn't just our paper. There were other papers in the United States, but it really did have an impact on U.S. law.
In this hour of the program, our guest is Dr. David Ansell. He is currently the Vice President for Clinical Affairs and Chief Medical Officer at Rush University Medical Center. He's a physician, and we're talking about healthcare in America, but also specifically about his book, County, Life, Death, and Politics at Chicago's Public Hospital. Academy Press out of Chicago is the publisher, and it is in part an account of his experiences beginning in the late 1970s when he, fresh out of med school, decided the place he wanted to go to do his internship was Cook County Hospital in Chicago. And he explains that the reason that he wanted to do it, he and some friends and colleagues of his that were also just right out of med school, was that he felt that that was the place that was the front line in the battle over equity and fairness in the U.S. healthcare system. Questions welcome, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. And here's another caller, line one in Champaign. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Dr. Quentin Young, I believe, is now the national coordinator for physicians for a national health care program. Is that correct?
He sure is, yes.
And he is, as you say, a great advocate for single-payer health care. Here in central and southern Illinois, in the new Illinois 13, we have an opportunity to vote on March 20th for a congressional candidate who is a strong supporter of Medicare, improved Medicare for All, and that's David Gill. And he and Quentin Young has endorsed Dr. Gill this time and in a previous campaign. So he has strong support in the healthcare advocacy community, and just as you had trouble getting your controversial paper out, we've had trouble getting the word out about Dr. Gill because his stands are, I guess, not popular with the health insurance agencies.
Well, you know, it's so interesting you raise this thing. So we have to elect people to office who are supporters of a fair health system for all, and I would recommend for anyone in listening distance, you're in a district, vote for this man. I want to just give you, I think you raised a very important point here. And I reflected back on writing county, about going to county. People said, don't do it. It's impossible. You can't do this. The hospital won't get replaced. You can't end patient dumping, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we were able to get a new hospital. We were able to end patient dumping. But the inequalities that drive our health, terrible life expectancy gaps, the death gaps, still exist. So a 16-year-old boy in the south side of Chicago right now has a 50% chance of living to the age of 65, whereas 80% for a white kid in the United States. And much of this is from heart disease and cancer. And when you look at these communities, they don't have health care in them. Uninsurance is a big underpinning. I'm not saying it's all. We have to persist with pushing for a fair system. Unfortunately, it's the power of the insurance companies is so great. If you look at the profit that was made by the insurance companies over the past number of years, it's the number one most lucrative set of industries in the United States, and they are incredibly powerful. And just about every major politician has taken insurance company dollars. And I think we need a campaign across this country where we ask candidates to not accept money from health insurance companies as a matter of conscience. So I'm a big supporter, like Quentin Young, of single-payer, I call improved Medicare for all. But we have to support candidates. This is going to occur because we're able to do it locally, like anything else. I'm also encouraged by the fact that we've had many, many fights in our country around rights in which it took a long time to achieve them. This is one of them, and we just have to continue the fight for it.
Well, again, I want to thank the caller and encourage others. We're now moving into about our last 15 minutes on the show. If you'd like to call in, if you have a question for our guest or comment, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I wanted to have you talk about something else that I know that you were very much involved in. I think the argument is made that one of the big problems for people who are poor or don't have insurance is that they don't get routine care. They don't have the opportunity to have periodic physicals. They don't get the kind of routine sort of screening for various things that is recommended. One of the issues that really you took on was breast cancer, or the lack of the opportunity for women particularly we're talking about African American women, to have regular checkups to try to head off the possibility they would develop breast cancer.
Yes, was you know, it was one thing to go to county, and many of us did, despite what our professors told us. But it was another thing to stay, because to stay meant you had to take things on to improve it. It was never just enough to be a doctor or a nurse, that you really had to try to improve things. And so when I decided to stay on a county, it was to get involved with prevention and early detection. And we did. I apologize, that's the L behind me in Chicago.
A little authentic.
Not my stomach rumbling.
A little authentic background
there. Authentic Chicago background.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I took on breast cancer screening, because at the time it was a screening for breast cancer with mammography had just come out. It was very clear that there were certain segments of the population that didn't have access to it. And so I took that on, and we started a breast cancer screening program and actually spread it, you know, across the city of Chicago. It was really one of the first programs in the United States to deal with this issue of inequality. It's, again, another reason why I wrote the book, because 20 years later, actually the gaps between, in this situation, between black women and white women in Chicago, more than that, between poor women and women without insurance and those with insurance, is so great that it's quite horrendous. It's actually, like I said before, we're seeing these outcomes go in exactly the wrong direction. And again, another reason why I think we need fundamental change in our healthcare system.
Yeah.
But many of us took on those types of things. The first AIDS clinic at Cook County started when two of my colleagues started their own clinic to take care of these patients who were quite, people were afraid of, they didn't know, they were afraid they were going to catch it. And these two doctors took that on, and now it's a major AIDS treatment center at Cook County. The trauma unit, the first trauma unit in the country at county, began because a couple of surgeons said there's a better way to treat these patients. So there are many of us who, in this public hospital, in this very old building, got creative with trying to improve things, and situations that really became diffused nationally. Like trauma and comprehensive care for people with HIV.
Yeah. It must have been, in many ways, when you started out, a terrifying experience in the sense that when you go through medical school, I'm sure you learn all kinds of important things, but the place you learn how to be a doctor is when you become an intern and you actually start having to treat patients. And that is supposed to happen with the supervision of doctors that have been in the business for a while, the attending physicians. But it sounds as if there were so many times when you and the other interns were simply on your own, and you just had to try to figure out how to take care of people as best as you could.
Yes, it was an experience like no other in my life, and I would it made me who I am as a doctor, and I would never give any of it back. But it also, when we became attending physicians, we also said, we're not going to do it the same way. We're going to be more present. So there was a lot of decision-making that one did on one's own. I called us doctors within borders, the way one learned. And it was quite common across American medicine.
The National Weather Service has issued severe thunderstorm watch number 101, effective until 7 p.m. This watch includes the following county, Coles County. Remember, a severe thunderstorm watch means that conditions are favorable for the development of severe weather, including large hail and damaging winds in and close to the watch area. While severe weather may not be imminent, persons should remain alert for rapidly changing weather conditions and listen for later statements and possible warnings. Stay tuned to NOAA Weather Radio, commercial radio and television outlets, or internet sources for the latest severe weather information.
Trade that experience for anything. I also wouldn't recommend it as a way to learn.
Yeah. Let's talk with some other folks here. Next, we'll go to Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Hi. I'm pretty sure I read this in one of Malcolm Gladwell's books. I can't remember which one it was, and I can't find where my copies are. But it seems to me he had in one of his books a story about a cardiac surgeon who, I think he ended up at Cook County, and I think that was partly this dire lack of funds that got him thinking about the vast...
people with chest pain.
Yeah, people coming with chest pain, yes. Different ways that the various doctors triage these people and
yes.
did different things. And he enforced a study to find out what was actually best for the patients.
Yes.
And he ended up saving money.
Oh, because, my goodness, yes.
And saving lives because each doctor had a different standard and it wasn't really a something that could be backed up by science until he began working on this. And I just thought that was an example of good science and an example of you don't necessarily have to...
do more.
You don't necessarily... You can save money and improve patient outcomes and patient care in cases like this. And I thought
yes. Thank you for your comment. You're exactly right. It was Dr. Brendan Riley, who was an internist, who's now at Cornell in New York, but it was a chair of internal medicine. And the beds were being filled with people coming to the emergency room with chest pain. And he did a study, and based on other people's studies as well, that showed that one could use a series of low-cost tests in the emergency room to separate out who needed to be admitted or not, and came up with a plan that actually more appropriately used resources. The book is Blink by Malcolm Gladwell, in which it's raised. And you raise actually a truism about both Cook County and about our healthcare system as a whole. The truism is when you're faced with limited resources, how do you use them wisely? And at County, you were forced to do that because you have such obvious limited resources and you had to come up with new ways of doing things that could actually save lives and lower costs. It's really the challenge of our healthcare system because if you look at our healthcare system, I call it a bimodal curve of failure. So on the one hand, we have all these people who are uninsured who can't get in. On the other hand, we're wasting all this money with lots of things that don't either help outcomes or extend life. And if we had a more rational system that used evidence-based medicine, we would actually be able to deliver more for less. And many people who came through County, doctors and nurses, went on to wonderful careers in quality and other areas. One of my friends who I trained with and was there for 30 years, now at Harvard, used to say, "We were so far behind, we were ahead." So we learned to be very parsimonious in the use of resources and led to studies like you mentioned, Dr. Riley and Blink.
All right. I want to thank the caller again. We're getting kind of short on time. Let's go to another caller. This is someone in Weldon on line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hey, David, you get the best guess. I tuned in late, and I'm just fascinated by this whole subject because I'm recently between jobs. My husband got laid off. We're not going to do the COBRA because we can't afford the $1,200 a month for our family. And so I have another month before my new job benefits kick in. And so why don't people know about this stuff? I mean, it seems like America, you know, the Republicans can spin general data their way and say the free market will fix everything. But ultimately, you know, we were a free market in 1977. And, you know, how can I help spread the word?
So this is, you raise a great point. We all have to speak up about this. There's a lot of opposition. This is not just about the uninsured. This is about working people who lose their insurance. It's about people between jobs. The idea, only in this country, other industrialized countries have solved this. The idea that health care is a right, and by being a U.S. resident, that you have access to the best of our that our health system can provide, whether you have a job or not. This is so basic, a human right. But we need people to speak up about it There's Physicians for a National Health Program that anyone can join. There's campaigns around the state. But we need more people speaking up about this. And it's why I wrote the book. You know, I started this with an idealistic 25-year-old, and next year I'm going to be 60. And we still have not made the kind of changes that we need. You know, the Health Care Act is, you know, I want to say it's not nothing because it does expand coverage, but it's going to hardwire inequality in, and is still going to have large gaps like the one that you're facing. No one should face the lack of insurance because they lose a job. That's just immoral.
Yeah, it's frightening. I have to go to my job now, my new job. So my benefits kick in March, and thank you so much for what you do. You're obviously such a good man. Bye, all.
All right, thanks for the call. We've got a couple of minutes left here. As we have discussed here, the hospital, the old hospital first opened its doors in 1914, and it was not long after that people were saying that it should be torn down. So it took all the way until 2002 for a new hospital to be built, which now exists, and it was named for the former chairman of the Cook County Board, John Stroger. Things must certainly be better in Stroger than in the old Cook County Hospital, but it sounds also that many of the same problems. It's a more modern facility, yes, but the basic problem really hasn't changed.
Yes, I mean, it's a much better facility. It's respectful of patients. You know, the attending physicians are very present now where they weren't in those days. But the structure of the healthcare system that's led to these inequalities still exists. So I'll give you an example. I was talking to one of the lead doctors over there. I sit on the board of this health system now. There's an independent board. He told me, David, you know, the wait list for the eye clinic is so long at Cook County that you can go blind on the wait list. There's 4,000 people waiting for diagnostic colonoscopies. That means their doctors have found blood in their stool. You can't get a screening mammogram at the county hospital. Whereas if you walked across the street at my hospital, you could get all of those things done probably within a week. And how could that be in an America that we have? So the structural gaps, it's not the doctors, it's not the nurses, it's not the equipment. It's the design of a healthcare system that has at its core profits for insurance companies at the expense of not only the poor and the uninsured, but people who have private insurance and large copays. So it's a systematic issue, and guess what? We can do better, and we've done better with lots of other things. But you're right, the county health system in Chicago, but really all around the nation, is the system of last resort and oftentimes can't provide everything that people need.
The old building, the old hospital, is still standing. Is it used for anything, or is it just sitting empty?
It's sitting empty. It's supposed to eventually be made into offices, but the old facade is there. We call her the old lady on Harrison Street. Waiting for the economy to get better so they can convert it.
We have one more caller here. I'll try to squeeze in real quick. Calling from Indianapolis on our line 4. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I was calling because I worked for a hospital ages ago. It was maybe 30 years ago, and it was a not-for-profit hospital. Actually, they had nuns running the hospital. It was Franciscans or something.
Yes.
I was wondering, in the hospital, it was great. It was the greatest place to work. Now it's a business, and it doesn't run nearly as well. And I was wondering, what happened to all the not-for-profit hospitals?
Well, I think... You ask a great question. I worked for a Catholic hospital run by nuns. You know, many of these hospitals were community-focused with people who were mission-driven, and now it's a business. And many times it's unfortunately at the expense of the health of the population. And I think we've got to swing the pendulum back, and that's why, again, I'm a big supporter of single-payer health care system, or I call it Medicare for All, because if one had a system and you could keep your community hospitals aligned to the communities, I think we have the pendulum is swung way more towards the business side, towards the insurance companies, to these ungodly profits, and away from the needs of both the people and the communities in which they reside. And it's going to take all of us speaking up about this, not just the doctors. I wrote this book because it's almost a clarion call that this is my experience. This is what we did, but hey, this is getting worse, not better. And we have within our reach the means to fix it. But it's going to take a lot of us. And I think you raise a good point. As you've noticed a change over your lifetime, so have I. And it's going to take all of us to swing it back.
We will have to leave it at that. Our guest, Dr. David Ancel, he's author of the book County, Life, Death, and Politics at Chicago's Public Hospital. He is chief medical officer today at Rush University Medical Center in Chicago. Dr. Ancel, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to a program from the Focus Archives. We first broadcast this show January 30th. Our shows are available for you to listen to anytime that you like. You can also check the schedule that way by going to our website, will.illinois.edu.
This fall, visit England and Wales, locations made famous in Last of the Summer Wine, Downton Abbey, and more, including Agatha Christie's home on the coast of South Devon. Does American history suit you? Well, travel in private vintage train cars on our Civil War train. This September's itinerary includes important southern battlefields and discussions with historian Anthony Pitch. Information is at will.illinois.edu/willtravel or call 217-333-7300.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Radio Maria in downtown Champaign. Along with their dinner menu, tapas is served every evening until 2 a.m. Brunch is also served on Saturday and Sunday from 10:30 to 2:30. Information on menus and wine and beer lists is at RadioMariaRestaurant.com.
I want to take a moment here to tell you about a special series of programs that we'll be doing on WILL AM and TV next week, dealing with housing. We want to try to take an overview of housing issues in our area, particularly talking about the need for affordable, quality rental housing. And we'll be doing two radio shows and a television program next week. On Monday, in the 10 o'clock hour of Focus, we will try to get an overview of housing issues in Champaign and Vermilion counties. And we'll have two guests, Kevin Jackson, who's the Director of Neighborhood Services for the City of Champaign, and Libby Tyler. She's Community Development Services Director for the City of Urbana. And then on Tuesday, in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll focus in specifically on issues related to public housing in Champaign and Vermilion counties. And there we'll have three guests, Ed Bland, who's Executive Director of the Champaign Housing Authority, Greg Hillary, Executive Director of the Danville Housing Authority, and we'll also be talking with Gloria Thompson. She's Residential Coordinator for the Green Meadows Housing Complex and is also the CEO and President of the Danville Human Relations Commission. So we'll all be talking, we'll be webcasting these shows, and we're also very excited that we'll be doing a television program on Tuesday night of next week at 8. We'll have a roundtable discussion with a number of people working on housing issues in our area to try to talk again about public housing, about the need for quality rental housing for families. We'll also talk about how people in our area are trying to respond to the issue of homelessness. And I think it'll be a good conversation. And then there'll be an online chat following that. So all that's coming up next week on the program. We'll be doing a lot of our regular things as well. And Monday morning, Dr. Suzanne Troopin will be here with us for our regular program on women's health. And again, if you'd like to check the schedule, find out what we're doing, go to the website. That's will.illinois.edu. Well, that's it for us here this morning on Focus. We want you to stay tuned. Coming up next, there is much more in the way of news and weather and sports on the Afternoon Magazine. Celeste Quinn is the host.
Thank you very much, David. Speaking of weather, in the WILL Severe Weather Coverage Area, Severe Thunderstorm Watch is in effect for Coles County until 7 p.m. this evening. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3 Urbana, online at will.illinois.edu. 1 minute before noon in Kansas City, May wheat, 686 up 2, July 694 and a half up 2.5. May wheat in Chicago up 6 at 652 and a quarter. The July contract 662 and a half up 7. May corn, 648 and three quarters, up 4 1/4. July, 646 and three quarters, up 4. September, 581 and three quarters, down 3/4. December, 557 and a quarter, up 1.5. May soybeans, 1366
and a quarter up 16 and three quarters. July, 1372 and a quarter up 15 and a half. August up 15 and a half at 1364. September, 1343 and a quarter up 15. May meal, 373.30. That's up 320. May oil, 54.79, up 83. April live cattle, 124.80, down 45. June, 121.37 and a half, off 80. March feeder cattle, 153.